Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com, and I'm proud to present to you part three interview with David Flannery. David Flannery is up to his eyeballs with clients, currently working with 17 clients, and you're going to hear in this interview he's in the middle of working with his clients on developing and creating the USPs. He's actually on the write-up stage of the USPs, and you're going to hear what it's been like working with this many clients. You're going to hear some of the challenges he's faced. You're going to hear why he had to let two of his clients go, how he was able to identify clients that just weren't going to be worth working with, that was going to take too much time. You're going to hear how he handled them by giving them their money back. You're going to also hear how he set up an incredible joint venture relationships to generate 16 additional clients who are all on his waiting list, ready to pay him his consulting fees for when he's ready. He's totally booked up and is not willing to take on any new clients. I hope you've been following and listened to part one and part two, and as we continue to follow the progress of David Flannery working towards becoming the world's number one HMA consultant. I hope you find this valuable. Let's get going. Tell me, what is going on? What has it been like the last 2 weeks? You now have, or you had originally 17 clients. You had told me that you, if you were to do it all over again, you probably wouldn't have taken on so many clients because of the workload. Yeah. What's it like? Is it just overwhelming, or was it overwhelming?
It is overwhelming. Not insofar as, obviously, backbreaking work. It's just that it's time consuming, and you have to be, it's very hard being on the phone for 5 hours a day, just talking to customers. And because your mental energy drains, and you kind of get a little bit annoyed when they kind of start fumbling and fobbing off and whatever else. I definitely wouldn't take on 17 again. I probably would leave it at maybe 12.
All right. Now, you had mentioned that a couple of them, you had to let a couple clients go. Tell me the situation with that.
And actually, what happened was we were doing during the interviews, I came across a couple of what Richard would call anti-USPs, service problems, or just issues that they've had that weren't that they weren't called back on, or faulty products, or just bad service. So I kind of was faced with the problem of, well, okay, I'm not going to fix these operational problems because I just don't have time. Now, how do I create a situation where I let these people go but create value for them at the same time, and at the same time make sure they come back to me when they get their operational problems sorted out? So basically what I came up with was I rang them up and asked for a meeting.
Can you give me like a specific situation with which client?
It was actually the bowling alley.
Okay.
Where people had rang up and made arrangements for, let's say, a family night out, and they'd arrive, and the lanes would be gone, or be sold, or they wouldn't be there. Or that happened a couple of times.
And how did you learn about that? In what process of doing the USP?
The customer survey.
Okay.
That's where all the...
So you were talking to the customers, and you...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's where I got all the anti-USPs from. Another one was bowling shoes that they didn't have the size in, and just kind of a rough element hanging around during what should have been family time and things like that.
So did you, when you approached the owner on it, how did he?
What I did was, and it was a very tough situation for me because obviously I didn't want to lose the client in taking a long term view. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what I did was I rang him up and I said, "Listen, I need to have a meeting with you." He said, "Is it serious?" And I said, "Well, yeah, it is a little bit." So what happened was I had the meeting. I told him and I said, "Listen, I'm going to give you a check back," and I wrote a check out from giving back his fee. But what I want to do is let me continue on with the customer surveys. And I'll give you a list of the customers that I rang and what their problems were, and I'll do out a report for you. And you'll be able to you'll know where the customers are coming from. You can call them back, and you can take the operational problems then from there on. So basically, what I did with that was I gave him back his fee, and I offered him a service that gave him value for nothing. So I kind of made sure that I gave him value, even though I was kind of letting him go. And making sure that when he does fix the operational problems, that he'll come back to me to start to grow the business again.
I mean, do you think that's what he wanted you for, to identify these problems and fix them, but you're realizing that you're not going to be able to fix those problems, or is it too much to fix those problems?
I just didn't have to, I probably could have, but you'd have to be in there like 3 or 4 hours in there and training people and training staff. Like, you'd have to work in the place for a couple of weeks, and I just didn't have, I don't have the time to do that, you know?
Yeah. All right, and what was the situation with the other, what other client?
It was a hairdresser, and again, it was appointments, and it was just a lack of service. I know that's very shallow, very kind of shallow. Everybody says service, and you kind of go deeper, but it was things like not getting a cup of coffee, or not greeting the people when they came in, and just a very low standard of service that the customers observed. Trying to say that, and I sat down with the lady that owned it, and she just wouldn't take it in.
Okay.
That was just off course. Again, I did the same thing as the bowling alley. I gave her a check back and just said, listen, I'll do the rest of the customer service for you. I'll give the names of the customers that I contacted and what the problems were, and you could take the operational problems from that. And she kind of hummed and hawed and took the check back and said, will we not keep going on? I said, listen, there's no point. I'll just be taking money off you for nothing, and I'll be doing the service to you. You won't get value from me. Because until you fix those, you're not going to be able to do anything else. So she kind of hummed and hawed, and she eventually kind of said, well, okay, I'll look at them, and I'll come back to you. But, I mean, to be honest with you, if she ever came back to me, I'd have to kind of look at her again. I don't think I qualified her very well. That was kind of the first real kind of mistake I've made since I started. You know what I mean?
All right. So you're down to 15 rather than 7.
No, I took two off the waiting list.
How far into the USP are you with the majority of them?
Oh, I'm right, doing write ups.
Has it been difficult to come up with the USPs, or have they been obvious using the 40?
There's some pretty obvious. I mean, the one for a barber in town. What would be the American version of a barber? You know what a barber is?
Yeah, haircut.
Haircut, yeah. I had a chat with him, himself and three members of staff, and I did the staff talk and all that. And then about the second customer interview I was doing on the phone, I kind of said, well, why did you do business with them? During the customer survey, on the second or third call, I said, well, why did you do business with them? What brought you there? And he said, well, they're world champions. And I kind of said, what?
He said, they're what?
They're world champions.
World champions.
Yeah, apparently these guys went to Germany in 2005, 2006, and are world champions.
At cutting hair?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And they don't have it up. They don't have any of their trophies or anything in the shop. So I ran them back and I said, guys, listen to me. I've rang 2 or 3 customers and they tell me you're world champions. And they say, yeah, we're world champions. And I just went.
Wow.
I mean, that USP just, like, obviously I continued on with the customer surveys and all that and the competitor surveys. But, I mean, like, the USP I came up with them was, you know, world-class haircuts by world champions guaranteed.
Well, that's great. What kind of competition do they have for the fastest haircuts or something?
To be honest, I don't know. I think it's kind of on style, speed, creativity, and things like that. Like they do female hairdressing and things like that as well.
Do they do female and male?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean it's just like world class haircuts by world champions guaranteed.
Any challenges, unexpected challenges coming doing these USP?
Yes, it's easy when you're ringing a business because they're expecting business calls. But it's a lot harder when you're ringing somebody at, let's say, 6 or 7 o'clock at night with the person they're after work.
Right.
It took me a while to not sound like a survey, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, one of these kind of telemarketers for phones that ring you up at 8 o'clock when you're watching TV.
Right.
You don't want to sound like that. So I kind of got to a situation where I got it down to about 3 minutes and kind of got the gist of what the essence was.
How did you position yourself when you were calling? Like, what would you say? You'd ring up and they'd say, hello, and what would you say?
I'd say, hi, my name's David Flannery. I'm from David Flannery Consulting, and I've been approached by whoever it might be, and they've given me your name as one of their loyal customers. I'm just wondering, could you take like 2 or 3 minutes and just answer maybe two or three questions for me? I'm just doing a customer survey. And that would normally get them, yeah, that's fine, no problem. As long as you qualified yourself who you were and that you got your name from the business.
Okay.
I found, like, if I didn't qualify that I got their name from the business, that they weren't very kind of, they weren't very forthcoming with any questions.
Right.
Or any answers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So once I qualified myself with them, and it was apparent that I was out to help that business, they kind of loosened up, yeah.
And were they open?
But that took me a while to get down.
And so did you get some good feedback?
Yeah. Once I qualified myself, and that I wasn't trying to sell them something, mm-hmm. that I wasn't a telemarketer. They kind of loosened up, and I got it down to about 3 minutes on the phone, 4 minutes, and just took longhand notes. I advise anyone who's doing that, any other HMA consultants, to first of all qualify yourself, and make sure that they know you're not trying to sell them something, that you're actually just out looking for information to help a business that they use anyway.
How beneficial was the competitive analysis?
Competitive analysis, I didn't find it that I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
This time round, that's not to say that I won't need it in the future. I would not leave the step out because you'll never know when you do need it. I didn't need it this round, but like I said, I wouldn't leave it out because you'll never know when you do need it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very beneficial for me this time round because I'd really gotten the gist of what the customers were using the business for, and to be honest with you, the businesses that I've taken on, yes, while there are competitors around, a lot of them are kind of commodities, so you're going to have competition like that. And I mean, like I said, even though I did the competitive analysis, it didn't really help me. I kind of gotten the gist of what I wanted to say for most of them, you know what I mean?
How much time did you give yourself to come up with the USP?
I'm just still in the middle of the write-up.
So what did you tell them, 4 weeks?
Four weeks.
4 weeks, so you're going to do the write-up, so how do you plan on presenting it? Are you going to meet them personally?
Meet them personally over lunch. Just do a report, one copy for me and one for them, one for my files. And I think for most of them I have 2 or 3, and let them pick whichever one they want to use and leave a report with them and then move on to project 2. And if they have any problems with project 1, if they have any problems with project 1 within the next couple of weeks after I do it, come back to me and we'll talk about it.
Did you come up with any type of situation where you had a business that, like you said, it was just a commodity-type business where it was difficult to come up with a USP that really set them apart from their competitors?
I would believe that the only one that I thought I might have a problem with was the hairdresser until I found out they were world champions. After that, not really.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would say to people, one thing I would say to HMA consultants that are doing this, when you ask people why they do business with a business, they're going to say service and quality to you. You have to get deeper than that. How do you mean service? What do you mean by service? What do they do? Quality, who are you comparing them to when you say quality? And, like, take down the names of your competitors that you have to ring. Service and quality, you're always going to get, they're the shallow answers. They're the answers that everybody gives. You have to go deeper. But you have to do it in such a way that you don't feel like you're forcing them, and you have to do it under 5 minutes. Like, I'm sure it's worse in America, but over here, the people, even though they're going to be nice to you, they're not going to give you more than 5 minutes on the phone after a day's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But apart from that, I can't think of anything else. I mean, just follow the system. That's all I'm doing is following the system, and everything that I've done so far has been in the manuals. Like, I haven't done anything outside the manuals.
Here's an email you sent to me. Michael, good to hear from you. I'm going to be giving a 3-hour presentation at the Chamber of Commerce networking dinner. 350 business owners sitting at 7 p.m. my time. Did you do that presentation?
Yes, I did.
This is one of your type joint ventures in way of promoting yourself?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Speakers list, yeah.
You're on the speakers list.
Yeah.
So you, when was that? What night was that?
Last week?
Okay, it was Monday?
Yeah.
So you had 350 people there?
I did indeed.
And how much time did you have?
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. So what did you present for them and how did you prepare it?
The PowerPoint, I went through the PowerPoint presentation and either deleted a couple of slides that I thought weren't applicable or added some of my own.
Was this the long version one, the one that Richard and I did?
The long version, yeah.
So you took the slides and recreated it for yourself?
Correct. Changed the American spelling and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Kind of changed American spelling over to English person spelling and added some explanations of my own and things like that. Just kind of personalized it.
Okay.
Arrived, we had dinner. After dinner, then I was introduced. I wrote my own introduction, but I got introduced with that introduction.
All right, so you wrote your introduction for the guy introducing you.
Correct.
And you gave it to him, and he did it word for word.
Excellent. I would never let somebody introduce me that I didn't know because I'd make a hames of it. I always do that, write my own introduction. Gave the presentation, and afterwards then we had wine and cheese and stuff like that, and just handed out my cards. I think I went through about 200 business cards.
Did you do interaction with the audience or mainly just speak, lecturing?
I'm speaking, but anytime somebody put up their hand to them, I kind of stopped and said, yeah, no problem. I gave them about 20 minutes for kind of questions and answers at the end. And to be honest, everybody was really interested. I mean, the stuff there that they didn't understand. One thing I would say to people that are giving a presentation, what you have to understand is a lot of the stuff that you're going to be saying to people, they either won't think applies to them, or they don't understand it. And the one I find that they don't understand a lot is joint ventures. You have to go really deep into joint ventures and pull out the essence and make it as simple as possible for these people, because they just won't understand it, or they won't think it applies to them, which is wrong on both counts. It went really well.
So it was a straight presentation. Did you couldn't really sell at the end of it or close?
No.
Just straight content,
yeah.
And then you handed out all your cards.
Did a kind of walk around into different groups, or got introduced to different groups, and just chatting away and talking about talk.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the presentation.
Did you get good feedback from people?
Excellent feedback. The problem is I have now is that I have 16 people on my waiting list, so I'm kind of, well, actually, is it 16 now? 15? Yeah, actually, it is 16. So that's my client list full for the year, because I'm only doing 8 again and then 8.
Now, on the waiting list, have these clients paid you anything?
No, not yet.
Okay, they're just on the waiting list, and you call them back and say?
Exactly.
Okay, very good. So you told me you're booked up. You can't really take anyone until 2008.
I'm booked up until 2008. My joint ventures, I've suspended my joint ventures until 2008.
Let's talk in context for either the HMA consultants or anyone interested in joint ventures. And what I'll do is I'll just kind of read through this email that you had sent me. Okay, let's do it. So why don't you tell me your philosophy on joint ventures and how did you use a joint venture to get clients for your HMA marketing consulting practice?
Sure. My philosophy on joint ventures is risk reversal. You have to show that they are assuming absolutely no risk for all, and everything they get is upfront. What you have to understand is when you approach a business, the person you're approaching probably won't have a clue of what you're talking about. Like, joint ventures is high octane business, so it is, and a lot of people don't understand it. So what you have to do is reverse the risk, take it all upon yourself, and look like you're taking the risk upon yourself. I'll just go through exactly what I did to set up my joint ventures. The first thing I wanted to do was find out what companies have the same client base that I'm looking for. So basically what I did is I went to my local Golden Pages, I think it's the Yellow Pages in the US.
Right.
And I just looked in the Golden Pages and just went down kind of websites, accountants, solicitors, and just looked and see what, and took the numbers out and rang them. Now, the one thing is, I've got joint ventures with websites, solicitors, and accountants. I've got two website designers, four accountants, and two solicitors. What you have to understand is, to get those, I went to 12 website designers, I went to 14 accountants, and I went to 10 solicitors.
And all right, how did you, when you say you went to them, tell me specifically, how did you go to them, what did you do?
What I did was, I got their name and address, and sent them a letter, a JV proposal letter, laying out exactly what I was intending to do. I gave them a call and asked them could I have a meeting and explained. I sent a JV proposal letter, setting out the terms and whatever and what I was intending to do. I gave them a call about 2 days later and asked for a meeting. Went into the meeting and explained again what I want to do with them. Now, the thing about it is, again, what you have to understand is these people didn't understand what was going on. It's probably down to education. Like, as you know, I'm big on educating the client. I'm big on educating everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who comes in contact with me. So it was probably, it was the first time I'd done this. So it was probably just the way I articulated myself. And again, I don't know. Maybe I'm assuming that it was me that was at fault anyway. So, I mean, I kind of count myself lucky that I got two web designers, four accountants, and two solicitors out of that, you know? My point is, don't expect everybody you go to understand what you're talking about and get on board.
So what was your proposition?
My proposition was, they send an endorsement letter that was written by me to their client base, introducing my services to their clients. If any one of their clients became my client, they got 10% of the first project fee, which is €350. And that's it. And it's controlled. I mean, the way I control it is my JV partners have complete control of their list. I don't have their names. I don't have their addresses until they come to me for an op analysis.
Who pays for the mailing?
I do.
Okay.
I pay for everything. I pay for everything. I pay for the stamps. I pay for the printing. I pay for the postage.
And do you get it all done?
Pardon me?
Do you get the printing and everything done?
Everything done.
Okay.
Like, there's no...
Well, how do you keep... So they keep control over their names, but you get everything else ready.
Correct.
Okay.
And I write the letter. They have editorial control over it, so they see it before it's posted. They post the letters out. And then their clients contact them, my JV partner. My JV partner contacts me to set up a meeting. So I do an op analysis with the client. And if the client becomes a client of mine there and then, I get that person to ring my JV partner to confirm that they're a client. So my JV partner knows then what he's owed in money. So he has complete control. If it's a case the person doesn't ring my JV partner has the option of ringing that person anytime he wants and finding out exactly what happened. It's all about trust. There's no risk involved in my JV partner. There's no cost involved. So it's all profit for him. He gets €350 for just introducing me to somebody.
So what is the letter? Were the letters that you wrote... right out of the manual.
Yeah, and just kind of personalized, took the American, spelling out and...
How many went out? Give me some examples. How many did they send out?
One of them, the website designer sent out 150.
Okay, and what happened with that?
The accountant sent out 95, and the solicitors, I think, sent out 54 or 55.
So it wasn't that many. It was just, you know...
No, not many at all. I wasn't expecting a huge... I'd forgotten about it. I'd actually forgotten that I'm very embarrassed to say this. I'd actually forgotten I'd set up the JV.
And then who did the calls come into?
The calls came to my JV partner.
Okay.
I don't control the calls. What happens is, once a person, let's say the website designer, let's take an example.
All right.
Let's say the website designer has a client, mailed out his mailing list, or his client base. and a client of that mail, of that website designer, wanted to avail of my services or get a free op analysis. He called the website designer, and the website designer called me. There's no direct connection between me and the client until after I do the op analysis. The reason I do that is because it lets the website designer know how many of his clients are coming to me. And the reason I get the client after the op analysis to ring the JV partner, the website designer, is so he can keep a count of how many of his clients become mine, and that's how he gets paid. That's what's based on he gets paid. So again, it's trust. There's no, like, he can't come back and say, well, look, you had like 10 of my clients come over to you when he's keeping control of it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, was like the website designer pleasantly surprised that so many of his clients called him about consulting? Was he surprised how effective the joint venture went?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he got $3,500 for nothing.
Okay, so when they called, they were responding to the offer from the HMA stuff that you would do a free opportunity analysis.
Correct.
So you scheduled it and you met with them and you closed them.
Exactly. And then right after close, they got on the phone to my JV partner, let's say the website designer, and just said, just for thanking him and just to say that we had a good op analysis and that he'd become my client.
Okay, now for the HMA consultants, I want you to do a comparative of the positioning compared to your joint venture opportunity analysis compared to one that was done cold, like from your previous ones that you just met people. Was it a stronger, easier close?
Easier close. Oh, my God, so much easier. I mean, the trust barrier was broken because of the referral. Like, the fact that the person who had told them, let's say the website designer, the fact that they were already a trusted client of the website designer, and it was the website designer who was endorsing me, I didn't have to break the trust barrier. It was already broken because of my alliance with somebody that I'd already done business with and obviously had good relations with.
So doing it all over again, wouldn't you have rather gotten all your clients this way? Wouldn't it have?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So what would you tell a new consultant who's ready to go get names from the mailing list and call cold on...
No.
That's the hardest way you could ever do it.
What you want to do is get into your chamber of commerce, get on the speaking list, because once you get into there, once you're on the speaker's list and you're speaking in front of you have a perceived tone of authority that gets over the trust barrier. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like once these people have you, or give you the time to speak to them, in a situation where you're up on the stage, it gives you a tone of authority, and that kind of overcomes the trust barrier. And also then joint ventures, strategic alliances, there's a way to go. The only thing about it is you have to explain it, you have to educate the client about it, or your JV partner about it, or like your prospective JV partner, you have to educate them, because a lot of them won't understand what you're talking about. So you have to put it in simple language and put it in terms that they can understand, simple language, and also risk reversal and make sure that they are in complete control of their client list. But if they don't have complete control of their client list, they won't do it for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
Like, if they don't feel like they're in control, forget about it. Forget about it. I mean, put it this way: I don't get a referral from a JV partner unless it comes through him. One of their clients will never ring me cold ever.
Mhm. How many people did you get to endorse you?
Four website designers, two accountants, and two sisters.
Okay, so have you done all? Is that all those joint ventures done, or are there calls still coming in?
There's calls still coming in, but I have to suspend them until 2008. I can't take any more on.
So how many did those joint ventures? How many new clients, in addition to the seven, you know, separate from the initial 17 that you got over the holidays?
16.
So it brought on
16 that I have on the waiting list, but there's still more calls coming, but I've had to suspend them. So, I mean, I've probably had about 22 calls.
Okay. So I'm sure you're thinking with all these clients on the waiting list, you're now trying to streamline and get through the system working with your clients as fast as possible because there's money waiting. What are some solutions that you're learning and that you've found to really streamline this process, to use your time the most efficiently, you know, because literally time is money for you now?
Planning. Just sit down at the end of the day and plan the next day and stick to the plan. And don't be thinking about doing whatever something you're not supposed to be doing. Just keep your head down and keep going. Like I said, next year I won't be taking half as many on. I don't think I'll go over 10 or 12 because it's a lot of work.
All right, so we talked about this before. When demand goes up, price goes up. Have you considered increasing the price?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in 2008, price is going to go up, plus there's going to be a contingency factor. Probably 15% of the increased profit, maybe even 20% plus the fees.
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely going to happen because at the moment I'm just swamped.
So right now, how's everything going with your clients? Everyone's still on board. No buyer's remorse.
No. Apart from the two I had to jettison, but apart from that, that was my call. But I mean, no, everything seems to go on so far so good anyway.
Are you learning a lot about these businesses?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, like, I can see where Jay Abraham says that, like, getting inside other people's heads and getting inside other people's business, see how they're run and applying it. I can see, like, over 30 years that he was doing it, I can see where he goes off on tangents. I can see why he does that. Like, you learn so much just from listening to people and other people's customers, do you know what I mean? I can see where he comes, like, I found it very hard to kind of take in the first time I kind of, I was listening to one of his seminars, and I kind of thought, oh my God, how did you take all that in?
Right.
You just learn so much, you just become a sponge.
How much longer will it be until you're caught up with most of the USPs and then you're planning on the integration process?
Well, another 3 days, I'm going to be into Project 2 on most of them, and then the actual two I took on from the waiting list, I'm just on Step 2 of Project 1 with them. So it's getting kind of complicated.
How are you organizing all your clients? Do you have a notebook or a system? Can you explain your organization?
I have a huge wall chart.
A wall chart?
Yeah.
All right, what's on the wall? Is this at a paper or like a whiteboard?
One of the paper charts.
Okay.
And I just have their names and... When I'm meeting them and when they're expecting phone calls from me, and if I ever lost that chart, I think I'd just die.
Okay.
Because my life is on that for the next year.
Now, what about your notes? You have a notebook you have a folder for each client?
A folder for each client and a file for each client.
Okay.
And every contact I make, every recommendation I make goes into the files. And it's just I'm very meticulous about that, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, but you have to be, especially when you're taking on this many people.
Right.
Like I said, I wouldn't recommend anybody do this. I won't be doing it again next year.
Yeah, you're a single guy. You're not married with kids, so you've got full time to.
And I'm full time. Like, and if somebody was married with kids, there's no way they could do what I'm trying to do.
Right.
I'll get through it because of the fact that I'm single and whatever else. I wouldn't, like I said, I won't be doing this next year. It was very ambitious of me to do what I did. But it's all a learning experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'd be better for it. You know, I mean, if I can handle 17 this time, I'll just breeze through 10 or 12.
Right.
But the thing about it is, I'll put my prices up so I won't lose any value. You know, and I'll probably add a couple of percentage points on while I'm doing it, you know.
Right.
On the end.
Very good. Do you see some potential contingency deals? I mean, have you uncovered some real good potential opportunities down the road that you could offer contingency deals in trade for project work?
I haven't even thought like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm just so swamped at getting through what I have to get through here. I'm not actually thinking like that at the moment. I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
It's just that I'm not, I honestly, my mindset isn't there at the moment.
Okay.
I'm just focused on providing a kind of good and noble service to my clients at the moment. I'm trying not to be self-serving, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But yes, definitely. I mean, I'm sure there is, and I'm sure the flying past me over my head, and I'm just not noticing it, you know.
I've got people excited to know how you're doing and what's happening in your consulting life. And in these case studies, these are great because, you know, while they're fresh in your head, we've got them canned, recorded, and cloned for you.
I hope I don't depress too many people with this one. It's kind of, I'm swamped. And
no, it's great. Hey, this is the reality. You know, this is like the reality TV show of a consultant who took on a ton of clients and is making a bunch of money.
Having a nervous breakdown.
Yeah. Well, how are you? Well, maybe you can make some recommendation. How are you dealing with the stress and the work?
A lot of running.
Okay, so you're exercising.
Oh yeah, you have to because. Like the customer service competitor now, it's all you're doing is sitting down on the phone all day.
Yeah.
Like you're on the phone literally for 5 hours a day.
That's the end of our interview with Dave. I hope this has been helpful. If you have any specific questions for Dave, please email them to me. I will forward them to him, and we will cover them in our next recording. Take care.